The birthplace of General Electric once employed 40,000 workers in Schenectady, New York. By July 2017, just a tenth remained. When incoming CEO John Flannery arrived, he discovered something shocking at GE Power headquarters. The company's largest division had essentially run out of cash. Years of accounting adjustments had masked the reality that little money was coming in, yet they continued building expensive inventory despite a slowing market. It was like they drove off a cliff, Flannery later remarked, and there were no skid marks. This wasn't just another corporate bankruptcy. It was the collapse of an American institution once worth nearly $600 billion. How could a company that survived the Great Depression, two world wars, and countless recessions implode so dramatically? The answer lies in a perfect storm of hubris, financial engineering, and a corporate culture that punished bearers of bad news while rewarding those who maintained the illusion of success. Despite its name, GE began through J.P. Morgan's merger of electrical competitors for scale. Edison briefly served on the board before selling his shares. The company's defining leader was Jack Welch, a railroad conductor's son whose mother taught him, "Don't kid yourself, that's the way it is." Despite his small stature and stammer, Welch earned a chemical engineering Ph.D. and joined GE's plastics division in 1960, bringing locker room intensity to corporate life. Under Welch, GE eliminated over 100,000 jobs, earning him the nickname Neutron Jack, implemented rank and yank, requiring managers to fire the bottom 10% annually, and transformed GE Capital into a profit engine. From 1980 to 2000, GE's earnings grew from $1.5 billion to $12.7 billion, with stock price increasing 40-fold. Welch became a celebrity CEO with minimal board oversight. One director described a board member's role as simply applause. Jeff Immelt grew up in a GE family with an executive father. Like Welch, he was an athlete who captained football and basketball teams in high school. After Dartmouth and Harvard Business School, he joined General Electric in 1982. When tasked with fixing failing refrigerator compressors in the appliances division, Immelt impressed by learning repairs himself and joining service crews in customers' homes. In 1994, Immelt faced challenges after taking over the plastics division. He discovered accounting irregularities and attempted to address them quietly while pursuing aggressive growth. When profits grew only 7% instead of the targeted 20%, Welch confronted him about the disappointing results. Despite this setback, Immelt recovered and became CEO of GE Medical Systems before the board unanimously selected him as Welch's successor. On his fourth day as CEO, Immelt was in Seattle when the 9/11 attacks occurred. Watching from a stairmaster, he realized he was stranded as air travel ceased. He immediately recognized the crisis would damage GE's insurance business, NBC's advertising revenue, and aviation parts sales, all during a developing recession. Simultaneously, Welch's divorce exposed lavish corporate perks, raising questions about whether GE's success stemmed from creative accounting rather than business acumen. Behind GE's legendary management machine was a complex financial mechanism designed to meet profit goals. The Edison Conduit, an off-balance sheet entity, purchased assets from GE Capital above book value, creating earnings while GE retained the risk. GE also manipulated pension fund returns and matched accounting charges with gains to smooth earnings. After 9/11's $600 million hit, GE avoided taking a larger charge that might have reset expectations. Instead, they used GE Capital to offset weaknesses elsewhere, meeting revised targets with a nearly 10% rise in fourth-quarter earnings. This became Immelt's pattern, maintaining the appearance of stability rather than addressing fundamental problems. Enron's collapse and the 2002 Sarbanes-Oxley Act severely limited GE's financial maneuvering. As one board member noted, the worst thing to happen to Jeff wasn't 9/11, it was Sarbanes-Oxley. Immelt pledged transparency as investor skepticism grew. His campaign suffered when bond investor Bill Gross sold $1 billion in G-bonds, questioning the company's honesty and exposing GE Capital's risky structure. $127 billion in short-term debt, with only $31 billion backed by credit lines. As GE's stock stagnated under Imlet, he turned to acquisitions for growth. In October 2003, GE closed over $25 billion in deals across just three consecutive days. Critics saw these as desperate moves from a new CEO. Though strategically sensible for individual divisions, the premium prices raised concerns, particularly the 45% premium for Amersham, which required issuing new GE stock that further diluted the struggling share price. Board members later criticized Imlet for chasing trends, arriving late, and overpaying for acquisitions. While some early purchases succeeded, like acquiring Enron's wind turbine division for $358 million, others failed dramatically. Under Imlet, marketing took precedence, with Beth Comstock leading imagination breakthroughs to generate new products. Imlet personally chaired a commercial council of top executives to develop growth as a process. The fundamental question remained: could marketing prowess replace operational excellence and financial discipline? At General Electric, missing your numbers was considered a cardinal sin. The company's remarkable consistency in meeting Wall Street's expectations came through rigid management and strategic maneuvering. When results fell short, GE Capital provided quick asset sales. After Thanksgiving, employees worked grueling hours, ensuring everything was properly booked by year-end, with some spending New Year's Eve processing last-minute transactions. The SEC eventually uncovered questionable practices: improper locomotive sales to banks, misleading jet engine accounting that combined low-margin sales with projected parts revenue, and manipulative internal price adjustments that artificially boosted profits. Despite Immelt's reassurances about risk management, these investigations revealed a culture obsessed with maintaining the appearance of consistent earnings. As 2007 ended, Immelt projected bold expansion for GE Capital despite market turmoil, while GE was actually retreating from the mortgage market after discovering widespread fraud in its WMC unit, which had originated $65 billion in mortgages from 2005 to 2007. The 2008 financial crisis exposed GE's vulnerability due to its reliance on short-term commercial paper funding. Despite public confidence, Imlet privately sought help from Treasury Secretary Paulson. The company secured Buffett's $3 billion investment and announced a $12 billion stock offering, contradicting Imlet's recent assurances and following $18 billion in share buybacks at higher prices. By 2014, Imlet made two desperate moves: acquiring French power company Alstom for $13.5 billion and rebranding GE as a software company through the industrial internet. Both failed. The Alstom deal coincided with a declining power industry, while the Predix digital platform faltered despite massive investment. When Flannery became CEO in 2017, he discovered GE's true dire condition. After just 14 months, the shortest tenure in GE history, Flannery was replaced by Culp, who continued dismantling the company. GE's decline represents more than financial failure. Once a symbol of capitalistic meritocracy and corporate virtue, GE became synonymous with prioritizing narrative over reality. As one former executive noted, "Reality isn't a tackle sled. Story isn't a strategy. Sometimes imagination alone doesn't work." The lesson? Even mighty institutions can collapse when maintaining appearances takes precedence over confronting difficult truths.